Hey, and welcome back to Dead Shows Resurrected, the podcast where we go back to the old days of shows long dead. I'm Gabby, and this is my co-host,
Lane.
And this week we're talking about episodes 6 and 7 of Buffy Season 2, Lie to Me and the Dark Age.
We are we excited this episode?
I think we're excited.
We got some enthusiasm going. We've had some not so good ones, kind of some stinkers. But we're looking ahead at an episode that I remember to be very good.
Yes. Initial thoughts?
So we're talking about Lie to Me first, and I just remember loving this episode. I think it has some of the most quotable lines of this season, if not this show. And what'd you think?
Yeah, initial thoughts on this were that I really remember the closeness or the growing closeness of Buffy and Angel in these mm-hmm. couple episodes, and then how weird it was for them to introduce this random character of yes. Buffy's past. Yes. That's kind of what I remember from it. But I remember quite liking this episode.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to do the recap?
Yeah, sure. And I just realized that I said 6 and 7. It's actually 7 and 8.
Okay.
So ignore the first part.
little mistakes here and there. It's part of the process.
Little flub. Anyway. So, in this episode, we get an old friend from Buffy's past, back when she lived in L.A., comes to Sunnydale, and Buffy is very surprised because she thought that she would never see this guy again,
mm-hmm.
and turns out it was an old crush from Buffy's past as well as a friend, so there's kind of like that tension in the background, you know, the subtext. But yeah, he's kind of there, and somehow he knows that Buffy is the Slayer, so vampires are not exactly foreign to him, and we later find out that it's because he wants to really, really be turned into a vampire.
Mm-hmm.
This we don't find out till later, but it's because he is actually dying from brain tumors, which, horrible way to go.
Awful.
Buffy, of course, doesn't know any of this until the very end of the episode, but we have some angel jealousy thrown in there, and because he's jealous and concerned for Buffy, he goes to Willow and they do some digging into Buffy's friend's forged past and find out that, hey, he's not even enrolled into the school. Then they come onto a vampire club, well, a vampire wannabe club, which, let's face it, we've all been there, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty much the episode. Spike comes in and ends up threatening Buffy for a little while and feeding on some of the vampire wannabes. But they're fine. Mostly. Maybe a little traumatized. And Ford ends up being turned into a vampire and staked by Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the episode.
That's the episode. It's a pretty simple plot, but I think it was really effective. Guys, this was, like, so far, probably my favorite episode of the series.
Really? Of the series?
Of the series, not the season, the series.
Interesting, why do you say that?
So I say that for a couple of reasons. So this episode, half my notes are just LMAO. Like, half every single joke in this episode landed. I think that there's that. There's some really good emotional punch. There's some really good pacing. There's some really good tension. We forgot to mention, by the way, this episode is actually written and directed by Joss Whedon. And I think this is Whedon at his best. It's funny. It's heartfelt. It's emotional. It's Joss Whedon has a problem where he doesn't always balance humor and then, like, emotion well.
Mm-hmm.
But here, I think it's actually very well balanced. And I think that everything in this episode that they try and do works, with one exception. I'll get to that later.
Okay.
And you can probably guess what it is.
Okay.
But go on to your thoughts, to your overall thoughts.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this a little bit, or we've touched on this briefly, on Joss Whedon, continuing on with that thread. But I do think that Joss Whedon is really good at one-off episodes. Mm-hmm. And I think that's his strongest suit, is when he does one-off episodes that are very self-contained.
Mm-hmm.
Once he gets into the larger story stuff, that's when things really start to fall apart, I think. But I give kudos to him on this one because it was really well done. And mm-hmm. I really enjoy this episode as its own kind of little side moment. I agree. I think the humor was good in this. Pretty much all the jokes landed for me. Even Xander's. Yeah, actually really funny in this. And there wasn't a lot of him in this episode.
No.
Which was good.
Yeah.
We got to see some really good Angel moments in this. We also got some good Willow moments in this, and them interacting together, which I thought was cute.
It's a very rare pair, but it's good.
Yeah, I enjoyed their whole interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to see a little bit more of Buffy kind of opening up to someone else who wasn't the Scooby Gang, who had obviously known her for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was nice to see like those reflective moments on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the drama in this episode was really good as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was quite a few heartfelt moments in this.
Let's talk about what we didn't like, which I think will be brief, before we get into what we really enjoyed.
Sure.
So, my only real concern in this, and I think in the grand scheme of things, it works. I just don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Buffy jealousy of Drusilla. Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Oh, I did forget to mention Drusilla shows up briefly in the beginning of this episode, as well as later on when the vampires attack. And Drusilla and Angel kind of have a moment,
mm-hmm.
which actually was not that badly done, even with the whole Drusilla thing.
They were acting quite reasonable, which is rare for the show.
Yeah. They didn't really go off the walls. They weren't, like, fighting with each other. They were just talking to each other.
Like two adults.
Right. And, like, they had known each other for a long time, which is true. They have. Mm-hmm. And so I think it worked really well. It is kind of interesting, though, at the beginning, because Drusilla is literally about to murder a child before Angel comes in. Yeah, like an actual child. Which, good God, why was that child out so late?
Why was he out? My guess was, like, he had some sort of nearby, like, practice or something, and then his mom was late, and they ran late, and then it was dark early.
I guess. Well, they did mention that sunset is, like, at 6 o'clock, so it
for
must
some
be
reason.
In the winter, I'm assuming?
I think that just the sun sets earlier in the 90s.
Just in Sunnydale. Yeah.
That would be kind of creepy if that was true.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it is at the home office, so maybe it's some weird magic thing. Or maybe we're just thinking too much into it.
Probably.
But, yeah. What were we talking about?
We were talking about Drusilla.
Oh, right. So, yeah, Drusilla. Yeah, I don't really get the whole jealousy over Drusilla thing. I think we've kind of moved past that point in the Buffy and Angel relationship. And honestly, once again, my biggest problem with the Buffy and Angel relationship is there's really not a relationship there.
Literally, Ford asks her, is that your boyfriend? And she's like, yes, no, kinda. It's hard to explain. Girl, come on.
Yeah, there's a moment, too, later on in the episode where Buffy confronts Angel about Drusilla.
Mm-hmm.
And Angel kind of goes on his little rant about why he did what he did to Drusilla before turning her, and we find out that he is the reason why she's quote-unquote crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because he mentally tortured her before he turned her, which we know Angelus was a bad guy. Like, this should not
was
be that necessary? Much of a surprise, you know. It wasn't necessary, one. And two, I understand that Buffy is shocked because, like, wow, that's extreme. But also, are you really that surprised? He's told you he's done some pretty terrible things. He's a vampire. Like, it's not that big of a shock, if you ask me.
You know, I actually kind of like that, because we have to remember that Buffy is 16. Mm. And she probably is kind of naive in that way. She doesn't think that her kind of boyfriend would actually, like, really, truly, actually, like, hurt someone, even if it was his other personality.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would like it better, though, if up to this point, we had had actual Buffy and Angel moments.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond, like, the very little that we get.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they had an established, strong relationship, I think this fact that he had done what he had done to Drusilla would be a much bigger shock, and therefore hurt her much more.
The wishy-washiness of their relationship really hurts in that way.
Yeah, this relationship struggles so much from the will they, won't they,
mm-hmm.
except we all know that they are.
Yeah.
She even says in this episode, I love you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They've said it multiple times to each other at this point. Which can work if you're going to do, like, I love you, but we can't be together because of whatever reason, you know? Mm-hmm. But they're not doing that. They're just making a relationship that's not a relationship.
What's funny is it's clear Joss Whedon mm-hmm. wants to do a thing here where he's like, oh, she's a slayer. He's a vampire. They can't possibly be together. Except for Xander, no one has a real problem with their relationship that we care about.
I know. And you would think, out of everybody in Buffy's life, Giles would be the biggest issue because he's a watcher.
Yeah.
And it's literally his job to tell Buffy to kill vampires. But he's not bothered at all. He likes Angel.
Yeah, like, they're friends, kind of. Willow and Angel are friends. Like, everyone's cool. Except for Xander, but
we all know why Xander doesn't like them.
Yeah.
And so it's a non-issue. Like, this whole, we can't be together, but we are together thing that they have going on is just really annoying.
Would you have found it more annoying, though, if they had played up the forbidden love?
If done well, no.
Yes.
But this is a Joss Whedon show we're talking about.
Yes.
So it probably would have been worse. But if they had really truly done like a forbidden love moment where they hadn't, you know, had shows of like, not shows, sorry, episodes where Angel is literally in Buffy's bedroom and they're making out before this, you know, then I could understand it. But we have moments like that where they are acting like they're dating.
I think I'm thinking back to my relationship as a teenager. And when you're a teenager, in my opinion, relationships are very much do or don't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, either you're totally dating someone or you're kind of not. This will they, won't they is much more, like, grown up, I think, in a way that's a little unrealistic.
Yeah, I agree. It's something you would see much more in, like, romance films or rom-coms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole, like, we want to be together, but we can't for whatever reason.
Our jobs or our stations or our families or whatnot.
Yeah. And I don't know if they were going for this kind of Romeo-Juliet type of thing.
I think they were.
I guess so. But even Romeo and Juliet, like, committed.
Yes.
They got married.
They totally you know? Did.
They planned on dying together or running away. Like, it's not... Even they weren't so wishy-washy. Like, this is truly an annoying relationship because there's no progression.
Mm-hmm.
It's just little moments of them being happy together. And then much longer moments of them arguing about something stupid because one of them is jealous or one of them doesn't understand the other or this is getting in the way because, oh, I'm a sad, brooding vampire and you're a slayer or I'm a 16-year-old girl and you're 200, whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. If that was an actual problem, you guys wouldn't have made out like two episodes ago, you know?
I'll put in the books, my least favorite like romance trope is the jealousy. I think it's so tacky. It's maybe it's realistic, but it's not realistic in a fun way.
Yeah, I think, and this is on a very rare occasion, jealousy can be used as an effective tool in romance, but very rarely. And never in this context, where they're just jealous for no reason.
For no reason. I think of, like, in a romance story, like especially, like, fantasy romance stories like this one, like, the villain has captured the girl, and the villain and the girl might get together, and the hero is, like, really... jealous. Like, that kind of thing is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Like, if Angel had come back in a later season in a substantial way and was, like, really jealous of Spike and Buffy, that would have been fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't really see that here.
And, I mean, I can understand being irrationally jealous of stupid things.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, that's normal human nature, you know? But this played upon trope of, like, I'm jealous because you talked to another person for 2 minutes is just stupid. And also dangerous, kids. Do not fall for that in a relationship.
Going back to the episode, we've gotten a huge tangent.
Oh, yeah.
But going back to the episode itself, that's what happens here. Buffy just sees Angel and Drusilla talking, and she waits for forever to actually ask Angel about it, and instead is super jealous. And I'm just like, but once you find out that she's, A, with Spike, and B, in that case, it's fine.
Yeah, it's just, it's also the very played upon trope in romance things in general,
mm-hmm.
where they don't talk to each other or communicate in any way whatsoever until it turns into a fight.
Mm-hmm.
That's really annoying.
Yeah.
And also the biggest problem in most rom-coms. Like, just talk to each other.
Yeah.
It's not hard.
It's kind of clear to me that and we've talked about this before, but again, I'm just going to drive home. It's clear that Joss Whedon is not like a big romance guy.
Because
he would know to avoid these pitfalls if he were.
Yeah.
Either that or he would lean into them more.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you go two ways in romance, right? You either do the tropes completely, or you navigate the tropes in a way that makes your story better.
Yes, right? And Joss Whedon doesn't either.
Yeah, he just kind of waffles in the middle of both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But not well.
Yeah.
So that was my biggest problem with this episode as well.
Yeah, I think, I'm trying to think of other things that really bother me about this episode, and there's not many. I mean, Spike's really good in here, I think the vampire kids are fun as shit, they're so fun, I love the kids, they're so good, but do you want to talk about anything else that you didn't like?
I actually have in my notes down here. I'm so tired of this contention between Buffy and Angel. Just let them be a couple.
I'm sorry for harping on this too much. It's just, we're both fans of romance. We're fans of romantic stories.
Mm-hmm.
And to see this, like inability to just commit to a trope or commit to a storyline is really annoying.
Yeah, I think it's also more annoying to us now because, I don't know about you, but I so clearly remember Buffy and Angel being a couple.
Yes.
And watching it back now, it's like, oh, they really weren't. There's, like, moments of them being coupley, but not really.
People seem to think that viewers or readers or whatever it might be, they don't want to see these relationships be affirmed, and that is so not the case. Like, we want to see Buffy and Angel be domestic. We want to see them go on dates. We want to see them hold hands and talk about how much they like each other. So one thing that strikes me as a little unrealistic is Buffy does very little gushing about Angel.
Yeah.
Like, this is a minor nitpick, but when I was a teen with a crush, I would not shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, you know?
Yeah, no, totally. And even now, as adults, I find myself talking about my partner all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Not, like, gushing about them like I did as a kid, but just in general things, because we do stuff together. We live mm-hmm. together, you know? So I talk about my partner all the time.
You're walking in a store and you see an item and you say, oh, my partner loves that.
Yeah.
Or you think you're talking about restaurants and you say, oh, my partner recommended this restaurant, let's go there. Like, one of the big hallmarks of a bad relationship in fiction is, like, what do Buffy and Angel know about each other?
Not a lot.
Not a lot. I mean, she barely knows anything about his past and jealous, which maybe is fair. He's kind of keeping that from her because he's ashamed. But we've established that Buffy has hobbies and interests and likes.
Yeah.
We
don't get to see them all that often in the show, but there's mentions.
But later on in the season, like, Buffy likes ice skating.
Yeah.
And she never brings that up with him. Like, he never brings it up like he knows. She likes fashion. He never brings it up. She likes, like, you know, clothes and beauty and things. He never brings that up. Like, do they really know each other?
I don't think they do a lot of talking, honestly. And I don't even mean that in, like, they probably spend the majority of their time making out, which they probably do. But, like, they don't see each other a lot, from what my understanding.
I think if the angle Joss Whedon's trying to go for here is their relationship is based on, like, fighting, like fighting vampires and battles and strife, then lean into that. Mm-hmm. Like, make it so they have, like, a hard time talking outside of a fight. Yeah. That would be fun.
Yeah. I don't know. We've talked about this for almost 20 minutes now, but it's truly one of the biggest contentions, I think, in this second season when their relationship is so important to what's happening.
Yes.
And especially what's going to happen later.
Yes.
That the fact that we're not seeing a lot of it, or even really any progression in their relationship, is just, it's what troubles me so much. Because the whole climax of this season is when Angelus comes back. And he basically breaks Buffy's heart forever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think she ever truly recovers from it.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I can understand where that's coming from, but I don't really see it, you know? And mm-hmm. that's one of the things that you want to do when you're portraying romance, is you really want to see how much they care for each other, how much they love each other, how much they will do for each other,
exactly.
You know? And it doesn't even have to be in long, drawn-out moments of them, like, continuously going on dates or whatever. Just little hints of them actually making progression. Because I know, obviously, that's not the focus of this show. It's
mm-hmm.
still ultimately an action-based show.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you want to make mentions of, hey, Buffy, you know, Willow coming up and being like, hey, Buffy, how did you and Angel's date go the other night? And they
exactly.
can have, like, little moments of talking about that. Or you can see it in the way that Buffy and Angel will gravitate towards each other whenever they're near each other. You know,
mm-hmm.
like, they could be subtly holding hands, or they could just stand really close to each other every time they come into a scene together.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, it's little hints like that that you can see, oh, these people really care about each other. Or they spend moments, like, looking at each other. They have a silent communication going on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They'll look at each other and be like, don't know exactly what's on each other's minds.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Little hints of showing that these relationships are working, are progressing, or doing anything besides fighting about stupid things like jealousy that
yeah.
doesn't even matter would be an indication that, oh, this is a relationship. Buffy and Angel truly care about each other. Beyond the superficial.
As you were talking, you know, what immediately came to mind for me was the Old Guard and how well Joe and Nikki's relationship was in that one.
Yes.
Because that's an action movie. It's totally about the action. The romance is not the point. If Joss Whedon wanted to go at that angle, he should look to those types of stories because the Old Guard handled that relationship so well. Like, if you haven't seen it, Joe and Nikki are two kind of like side characters who are in a very long-term romantic relationship, like thousands of years.
Yeah.
And they kind of hold each other when they need comfort. They hand each other guns wordlessly and without looking.
They fight together like one unit.
They are so synchronized. And we're not asking for that kind of synchronization with Buffy and Angel because they are still new to each other.
Right.
But we're asking for some sort of sign of connection, some sort of sign of that, like, that red, like, line, you know?
Oh, the red string of fate.
Yes, kind of that's thing what going I was looking on. For. Yeah. Yes.
And, I mean, Lane just said it. We're not asking for a long, in-depth explanation of the relationship or even super long scenes about it. Just hints that, yes, they are in a relationship. Yes, they do care about each other. And, yes, they do more than fight and mm-hmm. make out occasionally, you know?
We are asking for the barest of crumbs, please.
Yes, yes.
And we want to like Buffy and Angel together. We really do.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of, and this is two queer kids asking for like a good straight romance here. This is how much we want this. So it's really disappointing when we don't get it.
Yeah, yeah. Especially because it was such a big part of Buffy.
Yes.
Even now, people will comment about, you know, if you talk about Buffy, will comment on Buffy and Angel.
Yeah.
Because it's the romance of the show, you know? But you don't really get to see it. And that's disappointing.
It's kind of rose-colored glasses. We think it's a huge cornerstone of the show, and it's kind of not.
Yeah.
Let's go into positives.
Right, yeah. Well, that was the one big negative of this episode.
Yeah.
So, everything else is pretty good, I think.
I mean, what were some of your favorite jokes?
Well, one of my favorite jokes, even in the beginning, was when Buffy is kind of morose after finding out about Drusilla.
Mm-hmm.
Xander is trying to cheer up and is like, hey, let's go. I know what'll cheer you up. Crazy dance party at the Bronze. And when she doesn't really say anything, he goes, very calm dance party at the Bronze. And she once again doesn't say anything. And he sits down. He's like, okay, moping at the Bronze. And I just thought it was really funny.
Xander is pretty funny when he's not talking about girls.
Yeah. When he's being the comedian of the show like he should be,
mm-hmm.
And not a gross pervert, he actually has really good lines.
I just had the most brilliant, like, mental connection.
What?
Xander is kind of the Mineta of the show.
Oh my god.
Mineta, if you're not familiar, is a character from My Hero Academia who's just, like, a little gross, great pervert. He's horrible. No one likes him, but the creator loves him. He's totally Xander.
Yeah, yeah. I think Mineta is worse.
Yes, for sure.
But definitely Xander.
Yes.
Yeah. Very good.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Somehow we've managed to make Buffy connected to anime in two ways. And I don't know if that shows up how much nerds we are or if we're just brilliant.
You know there was practically a Buffy anime, right?
No.
Do you never hear of the cartoon?
No.
All right. For those of you uninformed, in the early aughts, mid-aughts, there was supposed to be a Buffy high school era cartoon. Kind of in the style of, like, Braced Face, almost. The art reminded me of that.
Oh, no.
Did you watch that?
Yes.
Yeah. There was supposed to be a Buffy cartoon, and they had some concept art. And never went anywhere. But I'll link the articles about it on Twitter or whatever. But it was going to be a thing.
I'm glad it didn't.
Yeah.
That sounds awful.
It reminded me of, like, Braced Face, Kim Possible kind of sort of art. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad that's not a thing.
Yeah. No, for real. The Buffy anime.
Oh, no.
That would be the title of the episode. The Buffy anime.
It would be like the horrible Supernatural anime that came out.
You mean the best thing that ever happened to me? You mean the light of my life?
Did you actually watch that?
Oh, hell yes. Keep in mind, I was still a fan of both Supernatural and anime. That was the best thing to ever fucking happen.
Oh my god. I mean, And I don't even think it was done truly that poorly. It's just, it wasn't good.
You mean you don't like to see, like, Dean do the robot, basically, from the bad animation?
It just was not good.
It wasn't good.
It wasn't good.
They couldn't even get Jared Padalecki. Like, it was that bad.
I know. Oh, man.
Anyway.
Well, now he's on Walker, so, you know. Good for him,
I guess. Good for him. He's living the dream. Being a Walker Texas Ranger?
Oh, God.
The dream.
The dream.
Do you think they still cut the cowboy boots from Chuck Norris? Like the old sweaty cowboy boots? Ooh. He slips into them.
I think he's too arch. He's a very tall man.
Okay.
I don't think his feet fit into there.
Yeah, true. This is a tangent.
Anyway.
There's a couple more really good jokes. I loved it. The dynamic between Willow and Angel. There's two good jokes around that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
First is when Angel comes into Willow's room. Willow has a bra on her bed, and she like snatches it as if Angel has never seen a bra on.
Yeah, and like throws it away.
It's such a teen girl thing to do. And then later on, Xander's freaked out that Angel was in Willow's room, which is a little bit understandable.
Yeah,
and she just kind of just very calmly goes, "Ours is a forbidden love."
Yeah, that's a good one. My other favorite too is when Willow is researching Ford and his records. Angel is sitting on her bed just kind of talking to her, and he goes, 100 years just hanging out feeling guilty, I really honed my brooding skills.
That was really good.
I just die.
It's so self-aware, which is really fun.
Yeah.
There's also a moment Willow's acting very skittish because she's working behind Buffy's back, and Buffy like very seriously goes up to her and she's like, hey, are you drinking coffee again? You know we talked about this.
Yeah. Doesn't Willow go... What does she say?
Willow is like no, I've stopped. Like
No. She says something in response because Ford is standing behind Buffy and she goes, it makes me...
Skittish or something?
It makes me skittish or it makes me jumpy or something like that. Yeah, it's just really funny.
There's also the fact that Miss Callender took Giles to a monster truck rally.
Yes! Yes! I put that on here somewhere in my notes. I was
Giles calls them nitro burning funny cars, which is the funniest. That's the best description I've ever heard of monster trucks.
That was really good.
Well, we hope you get the point. There's a lot of really funny moments in this episode.
Yeah. Oh, there's another one. I can't remember the context exactly, but it's when they're at the Bronze, which Bronze count one. They're talking about Angel before he comes in, and Ford asks something about Angel, and I think, Ford goes, oh, he doesn't go to school with us, right? He looks older, and Xander just goes, you're not wrong, and then another moment where Buffy walks out, because she's all miffed, because she's jealous right now, because of Drusilla, and not talking to Angel about it. She walks out with Ford, and Angel says something else about Ford, and Xander goes, you're not wrong again. And it was just really funny timing, I think.
Mm-hmm. There is a couple of other good moments. Like, Angel asks that Xander not call him Dead Boy.
Which is
super funny.
Can you not call me that? The other one I have is when Buffy and Ford are talking to each other and to Willow and Xander. Ford has just come into the school.
Mm-hmm.
And they're talking about their past connection. And Buffy says, oh yeah, I have a major crush on you. I used to sit in my room, think about you to that song, I Touch Myself. She goes, and then she takes a moment and goes, before I knew what it meant, of course.
But then Willow gets the best one out of it. Like 5 minutes later, Willow turns to Xander and she says, oh, that's what that song was
about?
Which is such, like, that's like something I would say, and so that was just so funny.
I just think it's so funny because, like, we've all had that moment, especially as 90s kids, who listened to songs that were highly inappropriate. To
so much Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera.
Yeah. Genie in a Bottle, anybody?
Oh my God.
Yeah. I used to sing that song in my room.
Yeah.
Top volume and dance around to it. I had no idea what it meant until years later.
Yeah.
But we've all had that moment where we go, that's what that song is about? Oh my God.
And Willow is just so pure and so good.
She's so sweet. I think I have Sweet Baby Willow in here like 5 times.
Sweet Baby Willow. Do you want to talk about kind of the more serious stuff?
Yes.
Okay. So this episode really grows kind of dire when Spike is introduced, and we find out that Ford has kind of sentenced a bunch of, like, kids, like early 20s, late teens, kids to die because he has a brain tumor and he wants to go out quickly. Holy shit.
Yeah, it gets pretty serious. And he even has a line when we first learn about what he's planning to do, where he says, two things every American teen should do, die young and stay pretty. And it's like, dude.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Yeah. Because we're basically dealing with a suicidal kid here.
Yeah.
With like a suicidal, almost like a school shooter type vibe. Like, he wants to take everyone out with him.
Yeah, I mean, it's not quite to that extent, but I get what you're going for.
Yeah.
It's definitely like, hey, I've suffered a lot. Because we do get to hear a little bit when, because they're stuck in this club, basically, that is in an underground bunker, waiting for the vampires to come and kill them, basically. And Ford kind of talks about his experience with having the brain tumor.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds horrible.
It's so well written. It's so evocative and just so, like, quick, but very well written.
Yeah. He mentions that he has spent days on end vomiting because of the pain in his head.
Mm-hmm.
How awful it is to find yourself just deteriorating from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he only has 6 months to live, which is
scary.
Hugely scary for basically a child. He's still a child.
Yeah, yeah.
And it really is, like, heartbreaking in a way to think about this kid is dying from something that is completely untreatable. Like, you can't prevent it. It's just, unfortunately, something that happens in your body.
I don't, like, condone Ford's actions.
No.
But I find him hugely sympathetic.
Yeah.
I think, like, obviously what he was doing was wrong, but there's an evil part of me that's like, can you blame him?
Yeah, no, he's obviously very angry because his life is being cut so short.
Mm-hmm.
And by something that's so untreatable, like, doctors can't help him, nothing can help
him.
And so he's a very sympathetic villain in this. You know, truly a sympathetic villain. Like, if you were in his shoes, you could almost, maybe not to the extreme that he goes to, but you could almost see yourself being so angry that you would do something unforgivable.
Mm-hmm.
Because what do you care? You're going to die anyway. So it's a really well done plot, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Still murder. Yeah. Still not okay.
We don't condone murder on this podcast.
No, we don't condone anything that he does. But, you can kind of understand where he's coming from.
There's a lot of good, Sarah Michelle Gellar's acting in this is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, when she's yelling at Ford and she's running around the bunker and trying to save the people there. First of all, it's so clear how good Buffy is.
Mm-hmm.
How fundamentally just a good person she is. Because she's so mad at these kids and she still wants to save their life. She wants to save Ford's life, too. Even after he tried to kill her.
Yeah.
Like, she makes some, like threats at him, and clearly she's not happy with him, but I don't think she really would have, like killed him herself or anything.
No. She does, like, kind of threaten him, but only in a way that, to try and get through to him, I think.
Yeah, she makes comments, like basically, like, if you don't let everyone out here, I'll kill you myself.
Yeah. But she is also angry, too, because he's putting her in an impossible decision.
Yeah.
You know, what do you do? Do you... You obviously want to save these kids, but your old friend is about to die too, and there's nothing you can do to help him.
Yeah,
you know, and it's sad and it's heartbreaking, and you can really see her go through the moments, and she even makes comments later when she and Giles are in the cemetery waiting for Ford to rise again.
Yeah,
that, you know. She thinks that Ford wanted her to hate him because it would have been easier that way.
Yeah.
And I think it's true, too. I mean, I think those were probably his motivations. Because he does say earlier, towards the end of the episode, before he gets turned, he says, you know, Summers, I really did miss you. And it's just, like, a really sad, touching moment.
Yeah, I think, like, Ford's actor is so good in this. Sarah Michelle Gellar is, again, just so, so good, as always.
Yeah.
Side
note, Ford's actor, not even a year later, plays Max in the original Roswell show. Not the reboot, really? But they did with the original one.
Really?
Yeah, and he's really good in that as well. But he plays kind of the serious teen in it. So you can see kind of where his acting chops lie in that, that range. But he's really good in that show as well.
Like, Ford has some really good moments in here as he is playing this part of kind of, like, the bad guy. Like, he kind of wants to be the bad guy, probably because, like you said, it makes it easier. Mm-hmm. Like, he wants Spike to say the evil villain line of, like, you know, you've got 30 seconds to explain why I shouldn't kill you. And Spike is so peeved throughout this entire thing. It's really funny. Even as this episode gets darker and darker, it's still kind of funny.
But
there's, like, some dark humor in there that's really well placed. But Spike was really interesting to me. That Spike was less of a character this episode and more of, like, a force of... He was, like, sort of a representation of vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was interesting and not bad at all. I really did like, and what was really clever of Buffy was when, to get all the vampires to stop, she goes after Drusilla.
Yeah.
And demands that Spike... stop them, otherwise your girlfriend will fit in an ashtray.
Yeah.
Which was so clever of her and so diabolical.
But I mean, that shows just how, like, smart Buffy is. You know? I love those moments where we get to see just how tactful and smart she actually is. Because obviously Drusilla was put off to the side. She's not fighting. She's not biting anybody. But she's kind of being protected by Spike. And so Buffy connects the two dots and is like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the information she got from Angel before then. I think she put all the things together.
Yeah.
And it's just a really good moment.
It's a really good tie in near the end of the episode. She does make a really kind of funny, like, a vertical leap in order to get to Drusilla. And I made the Griffin McElroy face, like, 40-foot vertical leap. It was really funny.
Yeah. Do we want to talk a little bit about the vampire kid in this?
I want to make one quick comment and then we'll go on to that. Have you noticed when Ford doesn't kill the vampire and the vampire gets into the library, they call her It. Did you notice that?
Yes.
That was weird, right?
It's actually come up a couple episodes before that as well.
I didn't catch it earlier. I caught it here.
Yeah, they do. Every once in a while, you'll hear Buffy or Giles or one of the Scooby Gang say It. For the vampire, instead of, like, he or she.
Yeah.
Never towards Angel, and I don't think ever towards Spike, but definitely to, like, side vampires, I've noticed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, because it does bring into question, like, the vampire human. We won't go into this whole spiel right now, unless you want to. But it does bring into question, like, a vampire's humanity.
Yeah.
Because, except for some trans folks who like it, you don't call people It.
No. But I think it's very clearly defined in this show that besides a select few vampires that they focus on, most of them are just bitey demons that like to suck blood. You know, they don't really have much of a personality beyond that. And I don't know if I would ever feel comfortable with calling any sort of creature It like that.
Even, like, our cats. We don't call our cats It, even.
Yeah, we usually call them some form of he, she, they, you know. Even if we don't know their actual gender, we just kind of do that because it feels more comfortable, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. It is so impersonal, which I get is probably better for if you're fighting demons.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's very interesting.
I don't remember them doing it later, especially when you come to think as they get to know more demons and more vampires and more witches and things like that. They don't, I think, use it later on, because I'm thinking of, like, Buffy's schoolmate vampire friend from, like, season 7. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of, like, Clem, also from, like, season 6, season 7. Like, we get to know more demons and vampires, and I think they're much less dehumanized as the show goes on.
I think so. I don't remember them using It later on.
Yeah.
But that could just be something that we didn't really
notice. Yeah, that we didn't catch.
I guess we'll comment on that when we find out. But yeah, it is something that I've noticed. It's not said very often, but it is said every once in a while.
Yeah.
And I'm like, weird.
I do want to talk about the vampire kids, because, oh my god, they were so endearing.
Oh my god.
They were so cute. Like, they were just a bunch of kids in a goth club underground wearing cloaks. It was so cute.
It was so cute. And they had, they have a coffin where one guy is just hanging out in it.
He's like, sup.
Yeah, they have, like, they're drinking out of goblets, you know? And
they have, like, old Dracula movies playing. It's so cute.
It's so cute. And if you were at all a teenager when, like, the Twilight craze was going on,
you definitely
had moments where you dressed up as a vampire, you know?
People love to make the joke that Buffy would have loved to stake, like, Edward. And I'm like, listen, the Twilight kids would have been so at home in this club. Like,
oh,
honestly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I totally would have gone to that club.
Me too.
It had been around when I was
Me too.
You know? I mean, I'm still goth now, but, like, I probably tamped down a little bit on the
Been tamped down by society.
Yeah, yeah. The whole vampire craze and everything. Not to say I don't love vampires, obviously.
Obviously.
Yeah. But, yeah, they're so endearing. Like, they have, Angel does make a comment when they go to the club to figure out what's happening with Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're these delusional, naive kids that are romanticizing the idea of vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Which is totally true. Like, I think vampires in real life would probably be horrifying creatures, you know? But everybody wants to romanticize a monster at some point in their life, you know? And vampires are just easy ones to do it because they're always portrayed as, like, sexy in some way in media.
And you have to think, if Interview with a Vampire exists in this universe, it would have just come out a couple years ago. It would have been these kids as Twilight. Like, come on.
Oh, yeah.
Of course they romanticize it.
Yeah. They call vampires the lonely ones, which I think is so funny.
It's so funny.
It's so funny.
They clearly don't know that, as Buffy explains, when you get turned into a vampire, you do genuinely die, and a demon takes up shop in your body.
Yeah.
They don't know that, but we can't blame them for not knowing that. They don't have Giles' books.
Yeah, they don't hunt vampires for a living, you know?
They probably are going off of shows and maybe some, like weird websites where they, like, talk about, like, vampire settings, you know?
Yeah. But they were just so cute. And they just remind me so much of how I was as a teenager and, like, a preteen, because vampires were the craze.
Throw up a couple of Death Note posters and that would have completely been us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
So it's just so funny that the episode wanted us to kind of hate them or think they were stupid. I'm like, no, they're baby.
Yeah, they're just, and for the most part, it's just kids trying to find a place. You know, they like a niche thing and they found others that like it as well. It's the same as when you join a club in school, you know?
Of course, it wasn't a death cult, but, like,
well, still. No, but it was a select few. I mean, if you noticed in when he said only the true believers, like, obviously, some kids just went there just to have a good time.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't really want to become a vampire, really believe in them. They just did it because they thought it was cool.
Yeah.
And there's actually very few kids who actually show up to this death party Ford is throwing. So you can tell that, like, for the most part, it was just kids wanting to do something on a Friday night, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it's surprising this doesn't come up later, like, people worshipping demons or people, worshipping vampires in that regard.
Yeah. I guess you see it when they do, like, their weird cult episodes or...
Yeah. We see a bit of it in the next episode, actually, when Giles and gang were kind of, like, fucking with demons when they're kids.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's obviously something that happens.
Yeah.
It's just not very widely mentioned, which is, you would think that they would mention it more.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we should talk about the biggest part of this episode, in my opinion, which is Giles' speech at the end.
Yes, yes. I was going to say, I actually love the good progression that we see of Giles and Buffy's relationship in this episode.
Yes.
They've obviously become so much closer than any of the weird contention that they had beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And Giles is so good. Like, he gives such a good speech to Buffy at the end of it.
It's so quotable. Everyone quotes it all the time. And they should, because it's really good.
Yeah. And he's such a good dad.
Do we want to pull it up, actually? Do we want to, like, quote Giles' little speech? Because I kind of want to bring it up. Because it's just so, so incredibly good. Yes, it's terribly simple. The good guys are always stalwart and true. The bad guys are easily distinguished by their pointy horns or black hats. And we always defeat them and save the day. No one ever dies, and everyone lives happily ever after.
Holy shit, though. Yeah. It's really good because it's something that you would want to hear in a truly sad moment, you know?
Yeah.
And obviously it's not true, but it's comforting to think of things like that.
It's what's really funny on a meta level is it's why we turn to shows like Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
Because Buffy really does save the day at the end. Maybe not in each episode, but she saves the day at each season, at the end of the series. It's why we have shows like Buffy, why we have like books, why we have video games and all this stuff. Because we want to know that there's a world where the good guys always win and the bad, evil guys that we are thinking of right now never win ever. And things are just easy and happy at the end of the day.
Yeah. I think it's why also escapism is so prevalent, especially now.
Mm-hmm.
With everything that we're going through. No matter what part of the world you're in, there's always something happening that's beyond your control or that you can't help it because that's just the way the world works, you know? Mm-hmm. So to read stories, to watch stories, to play a video game where you have that control or where you know the ending is going to turn out well,
mm-hmm.
even if you may not know how it gets there, it's such a sense of relief because you really get that moment of like, okay, some good things are in the world, you know. Sometimes the good guys do win.
Mm-hmm.
And in these stories, the good guys always win.
I think there's a place for dark stories, for grimdark, for things like that, because there can be catharsis in that, too.
Yeah.
But at the same token, I really dislike the trend that a lot of stories are taking where you have The Boys, where you have Game of Thrones, where you have a lot of these like grimdark fantasy novels that are so popular right now. It's like, come on, dude. I just want to see Superman kick Lex Luthor's ass, and then he goes home to Lois Lane. You know what I'm saying? It's just like,
yeah.
I just want to see good guys win the day for once.
I think it's why dystopian novels are not quite as popular as they were.
Mm-hmm.
But even certain dystopian novels had the decency to have happy endings,
mm-hmm.
for them, for as much as they could.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm thinking Hunger Games, you know.
Hunger Games didn't end happily. She beat the bad guy, but she wasn't happy.
Well, no, but she found a happiness. Even if it's not ideal or if it's the way she wanted it, she found a contentness. I wouldn't say she's happy, but
sure.
She found contentness
sure.
in her life, you know. But it's not always... And I agree. I think there's time and place for, like, the grim, dark, deep episodes or movies or shows and stuff like that. But sometimes you just want a goddamn happily ever after,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah. Not everything has to be Game of Thrones. Sometimes we can have, like, I don't know, All Enchanted.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
just that moment where the heroes win. Sometimes you just want to see the heroes win.
Mm-hmm. Especially, I mean, catharsis really happens in fiction where we see good people go through terrible things like us, but they come out strong at the end.
Yeah. Because we all have that fantasy that we would stand up and be the hero.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we would do the right thing. And it's nice to play out in
mm-hmm.
fiction.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can't be the hero. Sometimes
yeah.
you just are the bystander.
Yeah. Not everything has to be, like, Grave of the Fireflies, you know?
Oh, yeah.
God. Yeah, but it's just a great little speech. And it's such a wonderfully caring and such a wonderfully sweet thing to say to Buffy, and it's so good.
Yeah.
It's such a nice moment. And there's another nice moment earlier in the episode with Giles and Buffy where Giles is just like, just take a night off. Just rest.
Yeah.
Just have a nice night. Maybe you can see an angel. It was just, that relationship is so good. Like, if there was no romance in the series and just, like, Giles being a good dad to Buffy, I would have been so happy.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on this episode?
I think that about does it for me.
Yeah, I think that's all I have to say about it.
Yeah.
So we'll move on to episode 8, which is The Dark Age.
So this one is directed by Bruce Seth Green, and it's written by Joss Whedon, Dean Battali, and Rob Dishotel. You want me to do the recap?
Yeah.
Yeah, so this episode is, again, fairly simple. Essentially, Giles' past has come back to haunt him. So it turns out when Giles... I'm going to do a little out of order just to give a clear narrative. But when Giles was a teenager, early adult, he was in a sort of a bad boy gang. where he and a group of other kids would summon a demon into themselves for like a high, and it turns out they couldn't control it. So this demon has now come back, and this demon is now out to get these members of the gang. First off, it kills two members of Giles' old gang, a woman and a man. And when it kills the man, it goes into Miss Callender, who's Giles' relationship with us going really well. So basically, it long story short, it has gone into Miss Callender, and they have to get it out. In the end, they realize that a dead body will work. The demon will go into the dead body, and so they call on to Angel, who is dead body technically. And the demon goes into Angel, and the demon and Angel puts up a good fight and expels the demon, who then dies. If that sounds like a short description, that's kind of happens. Ethan Rain is back, of course. Ethan was a member of the gang. He gives Buffy a tattoo, which is really funny. Because the tattoo is what kind of marks the members of the gang, and therefore the demon knows to attack them. But, I mean, am I missing anything?
No, that's really it.
That's really it. Yeah. So what were your impressions of this episode beforehand?
I remember loving this because it's more Giles' backstory, mm-hmm. and I think that's just so good.
Mm-hmm. I did not remember this episode at all. I thought it didn't exist.
Really?
I saw the title of the episode, and I was like, what the hell is this?
I remember that. Yeah.
I think last episode, we were talking, and I was like, what the hell is this? I didn't remember this at all. Once I watched it, of course, it came back to me.
Yeah.
Because of Ethan, mostly. But, yeah, I didn't remember it.
Yeah. What do we want to say about this episode?
Like, if we seem kind of to be coming up blank, there's a shocking little amount to say here.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's not that it's a terrible episode or that it's bad, really. It's just okay.
Yeah.
It's kind of a Monster of the Week episode with Giles' backstory thrown in.
Yeah.
And I think the really good parts of it were when we learn about Giles and we kind of see his progression through the episode.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it is just kind of there.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I think the most heartbreaking part of the episode is when Buffy goes to see Giles, and he's clearly unwell. He seems to be out of it, and he's got 5 o'clock shadow, and he's, ruffled. She goes to Miss Callender, and she says, I think he's been drinking. And that had such a dad's in the bottle again kind of element to it. It was really heartbreaking.
Yeah, it was sad. I think also the end where Miss Callender has clearly been affected by this.
Yeah.
Because obviously she's come up against things being a techno-pagan, you know, but I don't think she's truly ever
had a demon
possess her.
Yeah.
And so this was obviously a really hard moment. And the fact that it was really Giles' fault kind of hits her.
Yeah.
And I think the fact that she is now hesitant to be around him is super sad.
It's so sad.
It's so sad because the relationship
is so cute.
Yeah, and it was going so well.
Yeah.
So this is a really low point for their relationship, I think.
I have a big question for you.
Yeah.
So I think we can all agree that relationships in fiction need a little bit of tension, need a little bit of conflict.
Right.
Do you think this conflict was necessary for Giles and Callender?
No. I don't think this specific conflict was necessary. I think they would have obviously come upon conflict at some point.
Yeah.
Whether it would have been their differences in the way they view the world, or the fact that Giles is so against technology sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, something like that I could see more being a reason for their conflict.
Mm-hmm.
This, I think, was just a way to introduce conflict into their relationship. And also expand on why Ethan is around.
Yeah.
And give Giles, some more rebellious backstory.
Does Ethan show up after this?
I don't think so. Maybe once more. I think he does,
once more.
No, I think he shows up once more.
It shows how good our memories are. This is the podcast. This is the podcast of bad memories. Honestly.
It is. But again, remember, it's been, 10 years since we've ever seen an episode of Buffy. So
I'm talking about when we're doing the recaps and stuff.
Oh, well, yeah. But we haven't gotten to that point.
Yeah.
If he shows up again.
Yeah.
But we are pretty terrible at recapping.
Yeah. There's a couple of little good moments in this. I really liked the moment when Buffy and Willow were doing Anywhere But Here. Mm-hmm. That little game. It reminded me of doing games as a kid, like...
MASH.
Like MASH. Yes! That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. For those of you who have never played MASH, which I'm sorry if you haven't, it's this game basically where you write down the word MASH, which stands for mansion, apartment, shack, or house.
Yeah.
And then you write down like a list of names of people you liked, how many kids you would have, what job you would have, mm-hmm. how many pets you would have. If
and
you
there's always
own a
like
car, you know, it's like different categories you can put in.
And it's always like three good ones and one bad one.
Yeah. And so then you put in, or if you did it like my friends and I did it, you would put in the same amount for each one. So you had an equal chance of getting either. Because we were wild like that.
Oh, wild.
Yeah. But then basically what you would do is you would draw a spiral and then your friend would tell you to stop. And then you would count the number of the spiral and use that to start crossing off things from the list mm-hmm. until you had a complete list of where you would live, the person you would end up with, how many kids you had, whatever the categories were.
Wait, were you doing this in England?
Yeah.
Oh my god, this is like an international game.
Oh yeah.
I didn't realize that. And this is kind of like, we didn't get this off the internet, did we?
No, I think just kids. It was like one of those things that through osmosis knew, kids knew.
Like the S thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The S thing was like a really, I don't know if kids do it now.
I don't know.
But it was a big thing when we were kids and it looked kind of like a graffiti Superman symbol.
Yeah.
But things like that. And then you remember the fortune teller game?
Yeah.
That we used to play?
The four squares of fortune teller. Yeah.
Yeah. Stuff like that we would used to do as kids that mm-hmm. Even like the nursery rhymes that we used to have or the songs that kids used to sing.
Like the ubiquitous, like there's always like a really violent song about, what's his name?
Barney. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we would have that. There was like a bunch of things that just we learned through other kids. And I think it's like, I truly think it was through osmosis of just being in school. Like
yeah.
someone would hear it and then repeat it. And then someone would do it and then repeat it. And it just became a school-wide thing.
Yeah. And it's just crazy how you had it in England and Ireland and stuff. And I had it here in Texas. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. But it was just like a cute little game. And it's just like, yeah, of course you don't want to be in high school in Sunnydale.
Yeah.
And of course, you'd rather be hanging out with a hot pop teen star, like, somewhere else. I don't know who they named. John Cusack was
John Willis. Cusack was, yeah, one of them. Who did Buffy name?
Gavin Rosdale, I think?
Yes.
Who is that?
He's a rock star.
Okay, really? I didn't. Who was he with?
He was married to Gwen Stefani.
Okay. That'll do it.
I think.
This episode also has that pretty popular Tumblr meme. Giles is accosting Ethan and Cordy is like, oh, what's his problem? And then once Giles accosts him, she's like, oh.
Yeah.
And of course, she's figuring out that Giles used to be violent, but what's funnier to think of it as going like, oh, they're gay.
They really do kind of act like ex-lovers.
Oh my god, totally.
Yeah.
It was really creepy when Giles finds out that Buffy was alone with Ethan, and he was like, you have to get the hell out of there.
Yeah.
That was creepy.
Which is concerning.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, he's already harmed her once through the Halloween episode.
Well, no, I know that. I'm just, like, the implications of you have to get out of there.
Oh,
when you're
yeah.
a teenage girl alone yeah. with a man. It's concerning.
Yeah, I did. You're brain with her, not me.
I'm just thinking of what I would think if I was in that position.
Can we, this part's a little bit jumbled because we're just talking about the highlights of this episode. But can we talk about the fact that Ethan used acid to get rid of his tattoo?
It's pretty metal.
Insane.
I mean, it was obviously insane. He's insane. But it was pretty metal.
How would he not know that it wouldn't eat through bone or something? Like, what the hell, dude?
Because it's a TV show. No, I get what you're saying, though. Like, that's a pretty insane leap of logic. Like, if it was me, I would have just cut off that part of skin.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's pretty extreme on itself.
Although it does go through several layers of skin tattoos.
Yeah. But I don't think they're really well done tattoos because they obviously did them themselves.
They look very good. I mentioned this earlier to Gabby off mic, but they look very good for being 20 years old.
It's because they were drawn on.
It's not realistic. I want realism in my teen vampire show, Gabby.
Really? Really? I didn't realize that's what we were here for. Realism.
It's Simpsons.
No, but it's actually, I don't know if you know this, but tattoos are a huge problem in especially TV shows, but in some movies as well,
mm-hmm.
because a lot of the time, as you have tattoos.
Yeah.
So you obviously know that when they're inked on,
mm-hmm.
They look like they're a part of your skin.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Because right? hair grows over them and right. they grow faded and they grow kind of
right.
like.
And then you can see, I mean, I'm looking at one of Lane's tattoos right now.
Yeah.
But they just got, which looks very good. But you can see that it's kind of feathery on the edges. Not like on purpose. It's just something that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's done poorly. It's just like in little tiny areas, you see how it's kind of, because of the way the skin moves, it's kind
yeah.
of feathery in there. So a big problem with media tattoos is that
mm-hmm.
because they are done by paint
mm-hmm.
or body paint usually,
mm-hmm.
it never quite looks right because there's not the shading and the texture that comes with real tattoos.
Yeah.
So it always looks like it's sitting on the skin instead of being a part of it.
I'm looking at my oldest tattoo now, which is about 5 or so years old, and it definitely looks like fuzzy on the edges.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it's definitely part of my skin, and you just, it's really hard to get that with eyeliner and hairspray.
Yeah.
You know, which is one of the common ways of doing it.
Yeah. If you're a very good makeup artist, you can get it to the point where there's, like, a little bit of shading.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of smudginess to it. Like, if you're trying to portray that as old,
yeah.
you know? It's easier if it's a newer tattoo, because then you can kind of pretend that it doesn't look, it looks very crisp.
Yeah.
That's the way it's supposed to be. But if it's an old tattoo that someone's had for a very long time, like we saw it with Angel's tattoo as well.
Yeah.
Which looked clearly just drawn onto his skin, like stenciled on, basically.
And it's very ugly, by the way.
Yeah. That there's just, it doesn't look like a tattoo because it's so very clearly sitting on the skin and
mm-hmm.
not in it. And that's just something that is really hard to replicate.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not inking someone's skin.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. We're not asking them to, like,
no,
get
no,
real
no.
tattoos.
I mean,
here.
I think makeup artists do the best that they can.
Yeah.
Some try harder than others.
Yeah.
But it's just one of those things that will forever suffer in Hollywood unless
mm-hmm.
they CGI it on to look like part of the skin, you
yeah.
know? And even then, it sometimes looks a little iffy.
Speaking of bad makeup, what did you think of the demon makeup?
I didn't think it was terrible.
Yeah.
But it clearly was supposed to look like a demon coming out of Miss Calendar.
Why did it look like a zombie on the other two folks and then like it was bursting out of Miss Calendar?
I don't know. That's what maybe because she wasn't dead.
Yeah. Maybe, like, her soul and the demon were kind of, like, fighting, kind of like Angel and the demon.
Yeah.
So maybe, like the demon was kind of, like, bursting out in that regard.
Yeah.
Just a throwaway line to explain that would have been nice.
Yeah. I think I liked the fact that Miss Calendar's prosthetics looked better.
Mm-hmm.
The zombie ones were fine.
They were just zombies.
They were just, like, typical zombies. But Miss Calendar's were interesting because they actually looked like pockmarks, like coming out of
yeah.
her skin or like.
It looked like her skin was tearing, which was
yeah.
really grotesque in a good way.
Yeah. It actually, like, the prosthetics looked like it had deformed her face to make her face look almost completely different, which
mm-hmm.
I thought was good because it should look completely different.
Mm-hmm.
The demon battle between Angel and the demon, however, was not as good.
I didn't think that looked terrible. I think it looked pretty clean. Not particularly original or interesting, but it looked pretty clean, I thought.
Really? I didn't like it.
I also look at shiny objects and think they look nice, so I don't know.
I thought it was obviously CGI for all of it.
Yeah.
And it just looked like early 90s CGI.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't great.
Yeah. I think for the time and for what it was.
For the time, it was fine. It's not the worst CGI I've ever seen. It just wasn't. I think it could have been done a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I was just before this watching a clip of a Supergirl,
mm-hmm.
a show that I really quite like.
Yeah.
But the Martian Manhunter, that show looks rough. So I was thinking of, like, the comparison of that. Like, I was watching a clip where the Martian Manhunter looks like he's basically 2D. It's so bad. So this comparison, I thought, was great.
Yeah. And I realize I come off really harsh on CGI, and it's not that. I actually think CGI is really good for a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just also a really big fan of prosthetics, like actual done
yeah.
prosthetics.
Yeah.
Especially in horror.
Yeah.
I think that's when you get the best kinds of shock factor in horror is when mm-hmm. you do actual prosthetics, because then you can really make, like, you can really make it look like skin is tearing mm-hmm. or people's faces are being deformed or claws are growing out of someone, you know, their bones are snapping. I think that's when you get the best kind, especially when you can do it really well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm thinking of, so what I'm thinking of is, like, Tom Savini, who is super good at prosthetics, and he just, like, amazing horror films come mm-hmm. from his prosthetics because they look so realistic.
Yeah.
Or even if not, they're not supposed to be realistic, they look terrifying,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the, like, grotesque way that they're supposed to be, yeah. or the inhuman features that he does. So yeah. I love prosthetics like that.
I think, well, I don't know how they would have done prosthetics in this case, because it was kind of an ethereal, like, angel's face glitching out, sort of. How would they have done that prosthetics?
I mean, it would have taken a lot more time and money, and there would have had to be some CGI thrown in there.
Like stop motion, or like what are
kind talking? Of. I think it would have been better if he was struggling, and then like he even does it a couple times where he turns away from the camera, and if mm-hmm. he turned away and then came back and it was a prosthetic of his face, like turning into the demon mm-hmm. or being grotesquely stretched by the demon, I think that would have been cool.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'm asking a lot for a TV show. The CGI wasn't bad. It just wasn't great.
There's a moment in Angel, I don't know if you remember this, there's a moment in Angel where they go to a different dimension where Angel looks like his demon.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been really cool if we had seen a bit of that here.
Yeah.
That's a lot of continuity to ask for, because this is like 5 years later. Generally, it's a lot of continuity to ask for.
No, no.
Sure. But it would have been cool.
I also think it would have been really cool to see Angel's demon in this. You don't really see it. You just kind of see, like, a little bit of vamp face.
Vamp face, yeah.
And then you see the demon, Igon.
Igon,
that's
yeah.
his name. Which we have not said at all. but Igon coming through. But you don't really see, like, the demon that's inhabiting Angel.
I thought it was really cool, though, how Angel was so ready to go to bat for Giles, really.
Oh, yeah.
He was, like, totally willing to help. Like, it's really sweet. It's nice to know that Angel isn't just, like, Buffy's boyfriend. He's also kind of friends with Giles and Willow but it's nice to know they're kind of on a unit.
Yeah. What's sad is, and I'm going to harp on this one more time, before we kind of see Angel's progression with the other characters more than we see it with Buffy.
Oh my god, you're totally right.
Right?
You're totally right. Yeah, because he shows up in this one and he's all buddy-buddy with Willow and even Xander in the other one. But yeah.
Yeah. Right. Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't like it.
All right, I'm going to stop talking about it.
We'll stop harping this eventually. Once Angel's gone, we'll stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can pay us on Patreon to stop.
We have to make one first.
We have to make one first. But $800 a month and we will stop.
$800 a month and shut us up about fucking Angel.
Even though that's the point of this podcast.
But hey, if we made a Patreon, let us know if that would be something you guys would be interested in. Because yeah. that could help pay for this podcast.
We could maybe do more podcasts. Who knows?
Yeah.
Anyway.
Get better equipment for this podcast.
Yes. What's really funny, so at the end, Miss Callender's talking to Giles. And she's saying, like, you know, well, the hills aren't alive with the sound of music, but I'm fine, basically. And my mom quotes that all the time.
Really?
She says that constantly.
That's such a random line.
It's such a random line to quote all the time, yeah. but I guess it's stuck with her.
Giles' house that we see, his like apartment.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's very old fashioned.
Yes.
They have the Tiffany style lamps in there.
Mm-hmm.
They have, he has a basin for washing his face.
Which is so funny.
Which is so funny.
Is he a Victorian schoolgirl? What is going on?
Actually, okay. So the funny story real quick. When my parents and I were moving to England, we were looking at houses mm-hmm. to rent for while we were living there. And we actually did go to a few houses that were obviously not newer built. They were a little bit older. But they had the stations in the rooms with, like, the face washing basin and all that.
Wow.
Yeah. Some of the, like, some beautiful old houses that we visited in the New Forest area where my dad is from, because he wanted to go back and see it, obviously. They actually had, like, the actual sinks in there.
Yeah, wow.
That were for that. And it's so funny to think that actually still is around in places like that.
I think Giles probably brought it from England.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's common in California, you know?
Yeah.
Unless you live in, like, an 1800 style mansion.
Yeah.
Maybe. But
an old Spanish fort.
Yeah. But, yeah, there's still places in Europe that have stuff like that, which is funny. Yeah. But, yeah, I just thought his place was beautiful. And then, of course, he uses fountain pens.
Oh, yeah, Of course. Did you notice he was left-handed?
Yes.
We're going really into minutia here. But I thought it was so funny that he's left-handed.
Yeah. Coincidence, my mom is left-handed.
We're full of facts today.
Yeah. And I'm ambidextrous because of her.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Can I also just mention that, like, when the dead body of Giles' old friend gets put into the morgue, do you think, and the mortician, or the forensic pathologist is looking in the cold lockers for all this, do you think morticians and forensic pathologists do that every night, just to make sure the bodies are still there?
I mean, so you know, yeah.
Yeah. I have to wonder. If anybody is in that profession, please let me know. Do you check the cold lockers at night to make sure the bodies are still there? Because that's totally something I would do. Just out of sheer paranoia. Because I watch too much horror, you know?
I thought it was really funny when he was telling Giles, like, I hope you didn't eat. Because the bodies look fine. They were just bruised.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Yeah.
Maybe we're too desensitized, but...
I guess. But it didn't even look that horrible.
No. It was just, like, choked and, like crushed. It was fine.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of, like, Pushing Daisies, where the bodies in there were pretty gruesome.
Yeah, it wasn't like there were bones hanging out of the body, or it wasn't particularly bloody either.
He wasn't dissected or something. He was fine.
There were no big gashes. He was just a little bruised and then choked out.
Yeah. I do have in big letters here, Giles fucks. It's like, shock.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of running into the end here. I mean, I did have another note here that laser on tattoos, actually, Buffy has to save up to get it. First of all, I really doubt you can get it when you're under 18. Second of all, I don't know, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
Second of all, laser doesn't really work. Like, it works, but it still leaves an imprint, and it hurts like a motherfucker. It hurts way worse than tattoos. And she got it in a pretty painful place.
Yeah.
She got it on her...
Well, it's not like she purposely wanted it.
No, of course, that's what I'm saying. But, like, also, like I just think it's funny, because it would have still pretty much been there. Not that this is completely nitpicking. But... Do we have any more thoughts on this episode?
I don't think so. I have young Giles is so hot because they show a picture of young Anthony Stewart Head.
Oh, yeah. And he's really nice.
He's holding a guitar and it's obviously a leather jacket. It just looks really good.
That's about it for my thoughts on this episode. I just really liked... I think that even though Giles and Buffy had a conflict here, it was still pretty natural. And it makes sense he won't protect her.
Yeah. And he obviously is suffering from the fact that he made a bunch of mistakes that he never cleared up in his youth.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's trying really hard to fix it, which I think is a very human response.
Yeah.
And he also didn't want anybody to see him that way either, which I think is also a very human response, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's really it. That's all I had on the episode.
I mean, I think that's about it for these two episodes. They were really great and just okay.
Yeah. So... Coming up, we have the next couple of episodes. Oh.
Next up, we have episodes 9 and 10 of the second season, which is What's My Line, Part 1 and Part 2.
Which actually line up perfectly.
Yeah, perfectly. That's great. Are we getting Kendra?
Yes. Kendra does show up in
this. Yes.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm really looking forward to Kendra.
Same.
Poor Bianca Lawson is her name, right? The actress. Like, that poor immortal girl.
I know. but yeah, I'm actually looking forward to these next two episodes.
I think they're going to be good. I'm looking forward to the ice skating, which I remember very clearly.
Yep.
Looking forward to Kendra, looking forward to her horrendous, horrendous Caribbean accent.
Ooh, yeah.
Neither of us are Caribbean, so we can't quite comment on that, but I mean, we can tell, even us, it's bad.
Yeah.
But as always, you guys, thanks so much for listening. Follow us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, let us know what you think of this latest episode, and do you have any other thoughts?
No. No, thank you so much for listening, and especially for giving us so much love and support on our little baby podcast that we started. This is really just a labor of love for both of us, and we're really excited that you guys are enjoying it. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your responses. Feel free to tweet us at our handles, which we have put in our description. On Instagram, I am private, but if I know you, I will friend you.
I'm private too, but it's okay.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope you guys have great weeks wherever you are. And we will see you next Tuesday.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye.
Bye.